hello. And once again, this is Rossi, better known as Chef Rossi, owner and executive chef of the Raging Skillet in New York City, New York's wildest, most eclectic, and sexy catering company. And if I do say so myself, and welcome once again to Raging and Eating. And here we are. It's a little early for me. It's about a quarter to 11 at night. You know, I normally don't like to talk to you until it's around midnight, but I had some energy. I went to see the immersive Van Gogh show. Have you seen that yet? My girlfriend and I went to check it out, and I really wasn't quite sure what to expect, but you know what? It was very cool. You're in this gigantic space, and everywhere you turn on every wall are the paintings of Vincent van Gogh, but they're made to move. So if it's a painting of an old farm with a windmill, you see the windmill turning, or if it's a painting of the water, you see the water moving, and it's like you really are inside his artwork, and it was very cool. Now, I have to admit, I was kind of sped out when I first got there, because I was running, and we jumped in an Uber, and we were running late, and my heart was beating, and I was moving fast, and then we got there, and I was obsessed with finding a good place to sit, because I wanted to get a good view, and it took me a while to realize that everything's a good view, because everywhere you turn, it's on every wall, but, you know, I was in denial about that, so I have to admit, I kind of blew the first 15 minutes of my Van Gogh Shangri-La. But then I started to slow down and get into the groove. And really what we had to do is, I guess it's sort of a 35-minute cycle or something like that. We had to stay for two shows because I needed the first show just to kind of slow down my heart and get into the groove. And by the second show, I was in the zen and I was really feeling him. And while I was immersed in his paintings, I was also caught up in the sadness of his life. I've always loved Vincent van Gogh, and many of us do. He's always been my very favorite artist, which is a big compliment for me because I'm an artist myself, although I don't paint nearly as often as I should, and I don't know nearly enough about art as I should, even though I've studied it to some extent. But Vincent van Gogh was always my jam. But I think it's the sadness and how tragic his life was that really kind of makes me love him. And I think everyone else too, because you can feel his pain and you can feel how much he suffered from mental illness and how sad and lonely and frightened he was and anguished he was. You can feel that in his work, but he pushes through it and still creates, I guess, what I would call a tragic beauty, or maybe a rough and tragic beauty. So if I was going to sum up what I think about Vincent van Gogh's work, I would say a rough and tragic beauty. And so there we were, immersed in a lifetime of his work, a rough and tragic beauty. And the poor guy only sold one painting while he was alive, completely unappreciated in his lifetime. He might have had a whisper of some appreciation, but really nothing. All of this fanfare and all of this wonder and the whole world bowing to him, all of that happened after he died. And that's also very tragic. And also, to be quite honest, you know, you really have to be pretty friggin' miserable to cut your own ear off. I mean, granted, captivating and interesting, but whoa. How much pain must you be in to do that? I've heard of people who cut themselves because the pain inside, they wanted to sort of match it with the pain outside. So I guess this would be the granddaddy version of that. Anyway, he had a rough time. He had enormous talent, and he blessed us with beauty that lives on and will always live on for as long as people appreciate art. We're going to love Vincent van Gogh, and hopefully he'll be remembered forever. He deserves it, the poor guy. While I was immersed in his paintings, I thought, if there is an afterlife, And if someone who suffered so much in their life and brought so much beauty into the world, you know, died without ever knowing it, I have to believe that my higher power, whatever you want to call it, God, you know, is typical, but we could just say higher power, the universe. I have to believe that they would somehow let him know after he died. By the way, just take a minute, look down here. Thousands of people are going to these giant arenas to become immersed in your paintings. They love you so much. They love you so much, they don't even necessarily get a chair. You get a little cushion and you have to sit on the floor because there's like 10 chairs and 5,000 people or something like that. All right, it wasn't that many. It was like a few hundred people and like a few dozen chairs. But anyway, Vincent, wherever you are, I just want you to know, people love you, baby. I'm sorry you didn't get to feel it when you were around. But also, while I was sitting there being immersed in my favorite artist's beautiful art, I also started thinking about that. How much we rely on other people so that we can feel good about ourselves. Now, granted, mental illness is a whole different category. I think even if Vincent had been given the love he deserved when he was alive, that would not have necessarily made him happy because he was suffering from mental illness. And I don't think back when he was around, we had the tools that we certainly didn't have the tools we do now, but so I don't know. But still, it would have been nice, the poor guy. But aside from that, I was thinking how much of our joy and our self-worth comes from what other people say about us. You think about it. I was talking with my friends last night, my good friend Charmaine. I went out and had margaritas and very greasy trailer park cuisine, because that's the kind of girl I am. We all had a little festive soiree get-together over really lethal frozen margaritas. I'm talking lethal. I had one and I was hallucinating. And then we had tater tots and greasy nachos covered with veggie chili. And I'm seriously considering barfing just talking about it. It was like a lot of salt and a lot of grease. But in the moment, it was sublime. It's the after effects of all that grease that maybe weren't so sublime. But we were talking about this, about what is beauty? And I had a conversation about something my mother used to talk to me about. My mother always had these funny stories about her growing up that always were meant, of course, to teach us a life lesson. And for a long time, I thought the stories were, well, let's just say I thought she was full of poo-poo. And very often she was. She needed a better roughage, I think, but that's another subject. Anyway, but then they always turned out to be true. So my mother talked about this story about this kind of, let's say, not ugly, but a real plain Jane, not very attractive woman who was an old maid, which was a horrible term. What, just because you're not married, you're an old maid? What is that? I don't want to get married, and I'm not old or a maid. Not that there's anything wrong with either. But, you know, nobody wanted her. She was sort of a plain Jane. But she was hardworking and talented, and she had a good job, and she made money, and she had a lot of other things going for her. And then there was this guy who was gorgeous, like breathtakingly beautiful, but he was blind. And not that there is not a way that a blind person can work, they certainly can, but back when this story happened, I guess this would be, I don't know, 70 years ago or something, not so many ways. So he was not employed, and he was basically living on the kindness of his family. And he met Plain Jane. I don't know, I think they met at church or something. Anyway, they fell in love. And of course, all her friends were saying, you know, well, you know, it's a good thing he's blind because this guy's gorgeous. He looked like Clark Gable gorgeous. And he wouldn't necessarily be with you. No offense. I would have taken offense to that, you know, if he could say. Anyway, they got married and they were madly in love and everything was great. And right around that time, I guess this would be 1950s, so that is about 70 years ago, right? Right around that time, there came some treatment or some surgery or something that for his particular blindness, it was said it was experimental. I'm assuming this was some pioneering predecessor to what later on became laser surgery. I don't know what kind of surgery it was, but supposedly there was something that could restore his sight, or at least something of his sight. But he didn't have any money because he didn't work, she worked, and so the only way he could have that surgery would be if she paid for it. And all her friends were telling her, don't do it, don't do it. I mean, no offense, but if he could see, he might be like, I could do better. And first I'm thinking she's got some lousy-ass friends, you know what I mean? But anyway, she loves him. She wants him to be happy, and she couldn't not do it, so she paid for his surgery. And the surgery worked. I don't know if it worked to the point where he could, you know, like have fabulous vision, but he certainly could see. And so the first time he looked at her, she was terrified, of course, but he had never actually had sight. So no one had ever taught him what was good looking and what was not good looking, what was beautiful and what was not beautiful. And so he looked at her, and he was thrilled. She was very relieved, and I think that maybe a little shocked, but she had just sort of thought the opposite would happen. And then, of course, he had some mean-spirited friends who were like, now that you can see, you know she's not beautiful. And he's like, I don't know what beauty is, but... And he points to her face, and he says, I know what love looks like. And they were happily ever after. So, granted, it's a little cheesy, and I think the life lesson was my mother wanted me to feel pretty, even though I was a fat kid and I had really big lips. And back then, people didn't appreciate really big lips. They do now. And I had curly hair and got horrifying haircuts. So I looked like a big-lipped fat kid with a blonde Christmas tree on my head. But she didn't want me to feel ugly, so she told me that story. But it's a great story. So he looked at her, and he wasn't looking for conventional beauty, you know, are her eyes blue? He knew that this was the face of love, and ever after, that's all he could see when he looked at her. And I love that story. So naturally, I thought it never happened, and my mother was full of poo-poo. But like I said, all her stories turned out to be true. Later on, I would talk to her old relatives, Aunt Ruth and Cousin Joan, and all these people who talked behind my back and asked my mother to buy me a comb for my rat's nest hair. And they would say, oh, it's true. We thought he'd dump her in a heartbeat, but he didn't. A lot of mean-spirited people out there. So that's what Charmaine and I were talking about. And Charmaine reminded me of this episode of The Twilight Zone where this beautiful woman they're going to perform a surgery on her because everyone feels that she's horrifying looking. And you're looking at her, she's so beautiful, and her face is all wrapped in bandages, and when they unwrap her, she's still beautiful, and everyone's horrified. They're like, oh God, no, what can we do? No, she can't be saved. And then you look at all of the other people, and they were like monsters. They have kind of like Daffy Duck faces. So they thought beauty was looking like some sort of helmet head Daffy Duck kind of face. And she looked like, you know, I don't know, Marilyn Monroe beauty. So is there a moral? Well, the moral is, let's say you have a few pounds where they shouldn't be. Or let's say, you know, you should have worn an underwire a couple of decades sooner. Or I'm projecting, sorry. Anyway, you're beautiful just the way you are. And who cares if someone else doesn't think so? You don't need anyone else's opinion to feel good about yourself. Now, Vincent van Gogh, I am so sorry that your life was so sad and lonely and scary and tragic and anguished. And I'm so sorry you didn't get the love and appreciation you deserved while you were alive. But I hope you're somewhere where you know that you're getting it now. Because, baby, you're it. I mean, you're a full-on rock star. I love Lady Gaga, but Lady Gaga cannot hold a candle to you, Vincent van Gogh. I mean, you're eternal. So think about that wherever you are. And you know what? if there is such a thing as reincarnation, then I got to think he was really owed one. So maybe he got to come back as like a king or a prince, or maybe he got to come back as Clark Gable. How about that? He could have been Clark Gable. I'll have to look up the dates when he died, when Gable was born, but I'll get back to you on that. I think there was plenty of time for reincarnation there. He could have come back as a puppy dog. Then everyone would have really loved him. You know, things to think about. So I've been feeling these thoughts really since being immersed in Vincent's paintings. The other thing that's been going on is a lot of partying, because we've all been so fed up and miserable with COVID. Yeah, maybe you weren't miserable. Maybe you loved it. Honestly, a lot of people I know really enjoyed themselves. They stayed home and watched Netflix. I'm going to drink some sparkling water, and it has a little effervescence of peach. Not drinking any tequila or any alcohol because I'm totally polluted from that lethal margarita night last night. Today, I'm just drinking water and sparkling water, and I had a salad, and I'm cleaning myself out because I'm not in my 20s anymore. But I've been catering my wazoo off. After 15 months of like no weddings and no nothing and sadness and miserable, and you know, like I said, some people loved it. The owner of Amazon loved it so much that he's built a rocket to go off to the space because he has all that money from the 500 million things we bought when we were in lockdown. I think someone said this on Facebook. I can't imagine having enough money to solve all of the hunger in the United States, all of the people who can't buy food, all of the issues around hunger and poverty in the United States, having that kind of money, but spending it all to make space travel commercial. And I thought about it. I'm like, that's true, Mr. Amazon dude. You could be solving the pain and loneliness and hungriness and sadness of millions of people. But instead, you and your ego are going off to space. So, you know, potatoes, potatoes. I personally would be solving hunger before I shot off to space. I would solve hunger, and after I fed everyone in the country and solved the reason why they were hungry, not just gave them food, but what is it, you teach someone to fish, they fish for life, you give them a fish, it's fish for a day, whatever. I would solve all of that. And then if I had any money left over, then I'd think about shooting off into space. You know what I mean? But that's just me. So, everyone's partying. We're doing weddings. We're getting, you know, it's kind of like what happened after the last pandemic, the roaring 20s. Well, that's what's happening now, baby. I catered a fabulous wedding Friday night and a fabulous wedding Saturday night. And then, because I'm a masochist, a giant, fantastic tasting party Sunday night. And then, because I'm really mentally ill, went out and had greasy trailer park food and margaritas on Monday night. And now I'm officially dead. Well, I'm not dead, but I feel rather dead. And so the moral of that story is, I don't know, don't have lethal margaritas when you've been working like a crazy person. But it was kind of fun in the moment, you know what I mean? Anyway, I've done lots of really fun things. Like, I feel like weddings can be so serious, and some people make them so serious and make them so stuffy. It's just fun to like treat everyone like a child, bring out the kid in everyone. This wedding I did Friday night was so fantastic, and I really kind of fell in love with the mother of the groom. She was adorable. She looked just like Sally Field, but she was so nervous and scared because that's her baby getting married. And so all I wanted to do was wrap her in a blanket of fun and do that for everyone. And there's so many cute ways you can do that. So I'll tell you some of them. We served a little baby shepherd's pie that was adorable. And I invented shepherd's pies, but I started doing them as an hors d'oeuvre many years ago when I had a British rocker groom. And he really loved shepherd's pies, but he was having an all-pass cocktail party wedding. So I said, well, make it miniature. And it became a bestseller, and everyone loves it. So I cooked some chopped beef. First, I sauteed a fine diced carrot and fine diced onion. Cooked that for a while, then gave it some minced garlic and cooked that for a while. then threw in my beautiful chopped beef that I get here in New York City from Otto Minelli, which is the best chopped beef in the universe. It happens to be part short rib and part brisket and part sirloin. It's like an excellent combination with a good amount of fat. Cook that for a while. I gave it salt, pepper, and celery salt, one of my favorite seasonings. I love celery salt. And then, of course, you have to have Worcestershire when you make shepherd's pie. It is the rule. So I gave it some Worcestershire, and I gave it a little bit of chicken stock, because why not? And I gave it some A1 steak sauce, because I love throwing A1 steak sauce everywhere. Salt and fresh ground pepper. I cook that for a while. And then just to give it a little bit of fun, I gave it a little bit of V8 vegetable juice. So that kind of tomato action. Cook that down, adjusted the seasoning. That was gorgeous. Did that the day ahead. Then the day of the party, we made some mashed potatoes. You can make them any way you like them. But we just like cut up our potatoes, peeled them, cut them up, put them in the water, boiled them till they were soft, mashed them. We mashed them with butter and salt and pepper and a little bit of heavy cream and put them in a piping bag. You know what pastry chefs use. And so at the party, I got these beautiful little tart shells made out of yellow corn. So they were gluten-free, so all my gluten-free guests could have shepherd's pies. That's a big deal. Filled it with the beef shepherd pie filling, made a pretty little rose with the mashed potatoes and the piping bag on top, gave it a little bit of pepper on top, put it in the oven just till it was warm, and served that hors d'oeuvre, and people went mental for that. They loved it. And that's a sexy hors d'oeuvre. I mean, I don't know that it'll make you want to have sex, because you're going to want to eat 10 of them and then you're going to be too full to have sex, but it is a very sexy hors d'oeuvre. And then we made perfect little baby lobster rolls, which everybody loves. And my new trick now with lobster rolls is, because I've been making them for years, but they go on the tray, and when the waiters are passing them, they start rolling around the tray. They don't seem to behave themselves, so I'm always trying to mound baby arugula and things like that to sort of keep them from rolling around. So I bought these cute little taco stands for my mini tacos that I do. And I said, you know what? The mini lobster rolls would fit in those perfectly. So now they don't roll around. Isn't that kind of cute? And the way we did it was, it turned out the bride and groom really didn't like mayonnaise very much. They wanted a low mayo lobster roll. They don't mind a little mayo, but they don't want a lot of mayo. But it actually was better that way, because then I worked harder on all the other flavors. So I took Old Bay, because you gotta have Old Bay, and fresh lemon juice and mayo, and then some nice grain mustard, because why not? Who said you can't have a little mustard in your lobster salad? There's no rule against it. And celery salt, my beloved celery salt. Salt and ground white pepper, because I want to kind of keep it white. I don't want the black specks, because that's how I am. And I adjusted that. It was kind of gorgeous. And then we chopped up our lobster meat, which was fully cooked already, and mixed it up in the mayo-lemon action, not too much mayo, gave it a little more lemon juice, and then we mixed in finely diced red onion. It loves that. And finely diced itty-bitty pieces of celery and really thin slices of chives. Mixed it all up. Beautiful. And we served it in our little baby inch and a half lobster rolls. People went mental over that, I'm telling you. Just made them feel like laughing and singing and having fun. And it made me happy that they were happy. We did all kinds of beautiful food. Now on Sunday, I had a couple flying in all the way from Austin, Texas to taste my food. Now how's that for a compliment? These two people got on an airplane and flew in all the way from Austin, Texas, just to try my food. Now, you know I had to make sure they had a good time after that. And I knew they had a little obsession with buffalo chicken. So I made a gorgeous buffalo chicken, and then we pulled it, shredded it and pulled it, mixed it with a little extra Frank's hot sauce, the buffalo sauce. And then I have these perfect little ice cream cones made out of corn. I'm big on the corn. I put my buffalo chicken in the ice cream cone, and I have a special tray with holes cut out, sat it in the holes. And then I made a blue cheese sauce. I just mixed blue cheese and mayo and Worcestershire and a touch of Tabasco, and I put it in a little squirt bottle and squirted it on the top of the chicken. And then I saved some of that finely diced celery and sprinkled it on top. So it was a buffalo chicken ice cream cone with blue cheese icing and a little confetti of celery. It was just adorable, if I do say so myself. And everyone was laughing and having fun. It was just exciting. You know, it's kind of good. And of course, my new baby, if you listened to last week's show, you know my new baby is pickle pizza. Well, the pickle pizza came out fantastic. This was my first time serving it to a catered audience, to my audience of tasties. They all fell in love with it. And what I did was I took my pizza dough, fully cooked it, so it got a little crispy, brushed it with rosemary and garlic and olive oil, and put it in the oven till it got crispy. Then I took it out, and I covered it with ricotta cheese, and I covered that with mozzarella cheese, and sprinkled over that fresh chopped thyme. Then I put that in the oven and let it get nice and crispy. I wanted to see some nice brown on that mozzarella. I did this hours before they came. Then I cut it all into perfect little two-bite hors d'oeuvres because I am not a one-bite girl. I think that's a waste of time. I need at least two bites. If I'm going to all the trouble of picking up the hors d'oeuvre and putting it in my mouth, I want to feel some food in my mouth. I don't want these little dime-size hors d'oeuvres. Aren't they so cute? No, they're not cute because you have to have 5,000 of them and you're still hungry. Give me a nice abbondanza two-bite hors d'oeuvre. So that's what I got. Anyway, I cut them all up into my perfect squares, my two-bite squares, and then I sliced a sour dill pickle on top, perfect. And when the guests were there, popped them in the oven till the cheese got melted and everything was gorgeous and served them. They went mental. They had buffalo chicken ice cream cones and pickle pizza and baby shepherd's pies. So many awesome things. And of course, I gave them my lobster rolls because everyone loves that. And then I did a beautiful tuna tartare and served it on a Ruffles potato chip. That's kind of a bastardization. How can you serve sushi quality tuna on a Ruffles? Because I can, and it's delicious and it's fun. So lighten up. Anyway, I'm going to shut up now because I could talk all night, as you know. Just remember, you are beautiful, and if anyone doesn't think so, tell them to bug off, because it's your opinion that matters, and that's the only one I care about either. And also remember, life is short, so get out there and have some fun, and go see that Van Gogh thing. That dude is awesome. So like I say all the time, life is short. Go out and live it. This is Rossi for Raging and Eating, and as always, food is love, and so are you. You're gorgeous. I think you're gorgeous. My opinion is the only one that counts. Have a delicious night.